Radio's group chat.
My favorite thing is...
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it.
On iRadio's group chat.
With Valerie McHugh.
We're talking about it.
Cosmetic treatments are more popular than ever, with more people choosing everything from non-surgical procedures like Botox and fillers to cosmetic surgery. At the same time, the industry is changing. Clinics are seeing new trends emerge, influenced by everything from social media and changing beauty standards to the growing use of weight loss medications like Ozempic and Mounjaro. One clinic that's been tracking these changes is Aurelia. Dr. Salman, who's the founder, says his team has noticed some fascinating shifts in the types of procedures people are requesting, who's getting them, and what's driving those decisions. Dr. Salman joins me now. Thank you so much for coming on the show this evening. Tell us about the trend that you've been seeing. What are people who use weight loss medications coming to you for primarily right now?
Okay, well, yes, there is a trend relating to weight loss, but not a purely weight loss medication. It's just generally, and most of our patients are females, there's a quite a high trend on being super fit. You know, a lot of people taking up running. So generally speaking, the transformation of being super lean, whether using medications as you suggested, or generally from a lifestyle perspective, is the trend now. And that has its implications on how you look. And this really has, in the last wee while, pushed certain type of procedures that would be not corrective in a way, but to restate the best possible outcome after you losing too much weight. For example, if you're reasonably fit and you get fitter, you have very little fat to start with. Where are you going to lose it from? Mostly the face. So you have a lot of young girls that don't look as young anymore because they've lost, you know, they look a little bit gaunt. They lost the facial fat, the cheek. So that's one. But also you have people who have generally nice breasts and now it gets deflated. So it doesn't look as young or as healthy. It doesn't sit nicer in clothes or bikinis. And that has caused a trend for people to get sort of mild enhancement to restore what they've lost. Now, on the other hand, you have a lot of people who, because of the great health implications of weight loss, so people that used to carry a little bit, you know, not morbidly obese, but certainly either a little overweight or obese, and because of the availability of the new medications, that really is quite effective, and sometimes weight loss surgery, which now quite accessible, they lose a lot of weight, and then we have people in their mid-30s that look like they're 90. So they have a lot of excess body fat, excess skin. You know, you have like the stomach is destroyed, the arms are destroyed, and then we need to restore that. But that's a little bit more tricky surgery, a bit more complex surgery, but certainly that also has risen lately.
What is interesting about this, I know that you've said many of the patients that have come to you weren't significantly perhaps overweight to begin with before they lost weight in whatever way, as you said, whether it is the weight loss medications or whether it is that they have just gotten fitter and they have less fat to lose. If we look at breast tissue in particular, why can losing even a relatively small amount of weight have such a noticeable effect on the breasts?
Well, there's multiple factors to it, partially hormonal, but generally speaking, the part of the breast is fat. Mm. And then when you don't carry a lot of fat and you burn whatever fat you have because you're becoming like a super runner, like there's not 20 years ago, you'd have very few ladies that go for a 10-mile run every day. Now it's not uncommon. And these things have changed our bodies dramatically. So when you have very little fat to lose and you become leaner, when I say, you know, we have to be distinctive because some people say, well, I haven't really lost any weight, which is true because they've got leaner. So the muscle mass is more. Probably their weight went up. But because they're leaner, then the fat in the breast is gone. And this is what a small amount of body fat that you have, when you lose it, it gives you quite a noticeable effect on your physique or your figure, facial or otherwise.
Are you noticing younger people coming in for treatments? Has the age demographic that you originally started with versus now shifted in any way?
Not really. When you say younger people, they're like we have quite a variety of procedures that we do. For example, you have the 7 to 8 year old young children that have, for example, sort of more prominent ears. When they get school, they start getting bullied, and their parents will bring them in because they want to prevent that. So that's really, really young. But generally speaking, as a rule, I tend not to operate on anybody less the age of 20 for like an augmentation or stuff like that, because they haven't really developed properly yet. Now, unless they've had a child, that's a different ballgame. So they are then, you know, you can operate on it. But just generally speaking, there is no younger people going for surgery, but generally people access different procedures at different levels. So you have a lot of young girls that would want, for example, lip enhancement, which is simple, straightforward. But very few would go, okay, you know what, I'll just go have a breast augmentation. So there is no general trend. There is mostly the mid-30s who now are super fit. They go to the gym a lot. They finish their family, and they are young. And for example, if you got pregnant and your breasts got quite enormous because of breastfeeding, and you're still young, you want that restored. So these are the trends that we have now. Well, if you look at like 20, 30 years ago, mostly it will be ladies who are, you know, looking for like a facelift. So they're much older generation. Now we tend to go and do things earlier because most people want to enjoy life, and there's a lot of pressure on them from their friends. We emphasize a lot on looks now. So these are the trends that sort of you can see quite obviously influencing people seeking corrective surgery or enhancing surgery.
Do you think social media has changed people's expectations of how they should look?
I'm the wrong man to ask. I'm not really into social media or anything like that. But I think generally speaking, having access to information is incredible because you can research things. So for example, there's a lot of things that you had before and you go to your GP and the GP wouldn't know where to send you. But now you have access to research stuff, find solutions, and then you can seek who provides it quite openly. And the other beautiful thing about it is where you can actually assess those people you're going to go to see because you can see all the reviews about them. So it gives you some comfort zone. So there's a lot of positive to it. Is there a massive influence of social media for people to look a certain way? I don't believe so, because people are not that gullible. Like, people are still quite confident, even young people. Like I have an 18-year-old and she's quite confident. She doesn't really go, oh, well, because so-and-so on social media did that, I should do the same. Does that make sense?
I'm sure there would be many people who would disagree with your point of view on that. However, you know, everybody is entitled to their opinion on the way that social media can impact that. A lot of people would argue that the fact that we have seen a little bit of like what they're calling the Ozempic trend and the weight loss trend on TikTok and social media, it is making people very anxious about their appearance.
Okay, you're absolutely right. Mm. There are certain negative influences, but I'm talking from a surgical perspective. Yeah. When you come to me asking for a procedure, I don't do it just because you want it. You have to need it. Mm. So my input regarding that is difficult because we evaluate you, see, are you, you know, do you really need it? Are you suitable for it from a health perspective and from a psychological perspective? Because, you know, these are quite important. So we're not a hair salon that we can change the hairdo tomorrow. These are procedures that are going to take place. And of course, it also has risks. So this is what I meant to you by social media doesn't have, in my job, when you come in, doesn't matter who you want to look like, that's not the reason for surgery. Does that make sense?
I understand your point on that. Yeah, there's limitations, you know, and there's a lot of evaluation, I imagine, in your clinic on what needs to happen before any procedure would take place. We were talking there a little bit about research. How big of a concern is the rise of black market, unregulated cosmetic treatment providers, the likes of people who are doing like Botox and fillers and things like that? It's something that people have been talking more and more about now.
Well, see, unfortunately, when money get involved, a lot of people get into this for a quick gain. In every aspect of life, there's always a black market. But if you're willing to take a risk, I cannot prevent you from doing that. And of course, there's a financial aspect to it, similar to having surgery abroad. I'm sure there are exceptional surgeons everywhere in the world. But how do you verify it when you don't speak the language, or when you're going to jump into surgery by just taking a flight and having 5-minute consultation, you're on the table half an hour later? That is wrong. You should take your time. You should research. You should go to as many consultations as you can afford or can and see who you can get on with, because surgery has risk, and there are sort of certain things that you must do to decide on a provider. You want to talk to me and you're confident with me now, because complications is part of surgery. So if you're not comfortable with me now, before any surgery, how comfortable are you going to be with me after? Also, you have to judge the place. You want to see pictures of my patient, not computer-generated pictures. You want to go and Google me. So these are quite important things. And don't let me push you. Like if you come to me for surgery now, you're probably going to have to wait maybe 3 months before you can have a procedure with me because I'm booked. But if I can tell you I can do it this weekend for a reduced price, you should run away. So there are common sense that people have to apply, but unfortunately, there's always a black market. But in fairness, the regulatory bodies are doing a good job by trying to regulate that.
It's just all about, I suppose, if you, as you've said there, doing your research and speaking to these people that you might be going to as much as you can before any procedure or enhancement or augmentation is made. What advice would you give to anyone who feels a little bit under pressure to change their appearance nowadays? Whether it is because someone they know got a procedure done, maybe even with you, or even if they've seen people online getting things done.
That's not really an indication for surgery. And to be honest, we shouldn't sort of trivialize the process. Usually, there is a journey. Like, for example, a breast augmentation, everybody talks about. The journey is a five-year journey. Nobody just walks into your room and says, look, you know what? Susie had it yesterday. I want to have the same. It's a process. And most people would be thinking about it 2 to 3 years or 5 years before they come knocking on your door. Now, you can consult with them, but you have to have a realistic expectation of what you want to achieve. What you're looking for is achievable. It's not detrimental to your body. Like somebody who is petite and want a massive implant, that's not going to be pretty in a couple of years time. So that's a bad idea. So you have to respect the boundaries of the body. And then also fundamentally important, if it's not right, you shouldn't do it. And that's really the difference between going to somebody who's just going to do it because you pay them and where somebody going to say no to you. And if you're going to somebody who you're going to pay money to and they told you no, that's a really good advice. So please take it. So from that perspective, there is a process, and 99% of people, that it's not an impulse. It's actually a journey. And if I feel it's an impulse, or I feel, for example, they're being pressurized by their boyfriend or girlfriend to do something, I wouldn't do it. So there are certain boundaries that you have to respect and a process that you have to go through. And also, do you see, are they physically fit for the procedure? Are they mentally fit for the procedure? So these are quite important things that should be considered. It's not really just a walk in the park.
It's definitely something that it should be considered a journey. There's so much clearly that goes on behind the scenes before anything is even decided. So, Dr. Salmon, thank you so much for joining me on the show this evening.
Absolute pleasure. Take care of yourself.
Hi, Radio Scoop Chat. My favorite thing is if you're talking about it, we're talking about it.
On iRadio's Group Chat
with Valerie McHugh. Keep talking about it.